Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane. Today on the show, we're going to explore male friendship. And to set the tone, the stage for our conversation, here's a scene from the 2007 movie Superbad. Best friends Evan, played by Michael Cera, and Seth, played by Jonah Hill, are lying in their sleeping bags after a wild night and start talking about their feelings for each other.
I love you. I love you, man.
I love you. I love you. I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I love you.
I'm not embarrassed.
Love you.
I love you. It's like, why don't we say that every day? Why can't we say it more often?
I just love you. I just want to go to the rooftops and scream, I love my best friend, Evan.
We should go up on my roof.
For sure.
Like when you went away for Easter on your vacation, I missed you.
I missed you too.
I want the world to know. It's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Well, I love that scene from that movie, Superbad. We're going to be talking about the nature of male friendship, and we have three guests who have joined us on Radio Times. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Ted Glackman. He's director of Horizon House Delaware, a licensed psychologist. He's been part of a men's peer group for about 15 years, and he co-leads a men's therapy support group. And Ted Glackman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
And joining us by telephone is Daniel Duane. He's a contributing editor for Men's Journal magazine. Wrote a piece recently that was titled Why Men Suck at Friendship. Daniel Duane, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Jeffrey Greif, and he's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, author of Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendship. And Jeffrey Greif, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
A pleasure to be here.
Jeffrey, let me start with you. And I have to say, I really love that scene. It's sweet and it's funny. And it's also unusual to hear two men, young men in this case, expressing such love for each other. How come?
Well, I think that the way that men are socialized makes it difficult for a lot of men. And again, it's difficult in any discussion that we're going to have to cover the age range of 21 to 90. So we have to acknowledge there's a lot of differences based on people's age and their culture and then the idiosyncratic nature of their family. But generally, men are socialized to compete with each other and are not socialized to be as cooperative as women are. We're also less socialized to be emotionally expressive. And thirdly, we are raised to conduct essentially shoulder-to-shoulder friendships where we get together with our friends and do things and not the face-to-face friendships that women seem to be more comfortable having. So there are a number of issues we can lay out that can be talked about broadly, but it's part of the way that men are socialized.
And I do want to talk about all of those things. Let me get you in on the conversation, Ted Glackman. How would you characterize male friendship? Again, we're speaking very broadly here, covering, you know, age groups and different ethnic groups as well. But as someone who works with men in these intense therapy or even peer-to-peer relationships, how do you characterize a relationship between men?
Well, as Jeffrey indicated, the age is pretty significant because there's a lot to be said about young men and a lot that's been written about young men. My focus has been men at midlife, so my focus has been roughly 40 to 60. I'm 60 at this point myself, but that age span includes my active involvement and interest in this work, and so I can speak to that better than others. And I think there are more barriers to overcome to have close relationships as men, as Jeffrey indicated. However, with work and practice, it can be done. I would add to the factors he listed. There's for a lot of men, homophobia is an issue too. Mm. You know that I think the piece you played kind of hit on that theme a bit. It was an undercurrent, and I think that's probably what made it part of a funny movie scene. But I think men don't know how to relate in intimate ways, and I think there's fears of what closeness and intimacy really mean.
That they're afraid that by having a close relationship with another man, that someone will think they're gay?
Either that or it might stir up whatever inside of them and cause some confusion and some discord that's hard for them to process.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Daniel Duane. And I read your piece, Why Men Suck at Friendship. It's hard to summarize the takeaway from that. But some of that is personal, about a friendship and a trip that you took with a friend named Matt. I think you went to Baja. Took some kind of goading, it sounded like, on the part of the wives involved. But nonetheless, you had a pretty good time.
Right. So this was after the article was prompted by my best friend Matt showing up at my front door one day and telling me that he had to move to Seattle. His wife had landed a great job in Seattle, and she'd made a lot of compromises for his career over the years, and it was his turn. And Matt and I, our friendship was built around surfing, so it was very much one of these, you know, shoulder to shoulder friendships. And then when it was clear that, you know, he was going to be gone, our wives started talking about, well, maybe you guys ought to, you know, make some special time to be together this winter, you know, and you know, go on a surf trip to Baja instead of, you know, sort of to take the place of the daily surf sessions we would have had here in San Francisco.
But it sounds like, I mean, it took a little goading and organizing on your part, and it sounded like you had a wonderful time, and then when it was over, kind of went back to your life as it was. It didn't seem to bring you together, you know, to sort of keep this thing going.
Well, yeah. So the idea is really that, you know, if your friendship is, there's this sort of peculiar quality I think about, at least my friendships with guys, which is that, you know, if you built your friendship around doing something together, it's hard to make the switch to having a friendship based on telephone conversations. But I think there's also, you know, so when we came back, we had a wonderful time in Baja, and we got good waves and drank beers and did all the things you hope to do in Baja. And then,
yeah, sounds great.
He went back to Seattle, and I went back to San Francisco, and you know, reality set in a little bit. But on the upside, I think there's sort of a curious quality of certain friendships where if you've bonded tightly enough through certain experiences, something is kind of always there, even if you don't talk. You know, for years can go by, and there's sort of this unquestioned sense of connection.
Indeed, Ted, you want to say something?
Well, I think that's the way a lot of relationships seem to drift. You're close for a time, you share experiences, and when that experience is no longer in your life, there is a tendency to drift apart for men more than women, I believe. And it takes a certain amount of intentionality to counter that. It takes work. It takes practice. It can be done, but it doesn't happen as naturally as I see women maintain relationships over decades.
Jeffrey, let me go back to you. You're the first one to mention the kind of shoulder to shoulder, the idea, and again, we're speaking in broad stereotypes here, but nonetheless, the idea of sort of shoulder and shoulder activities, whereas women, you know, we talk to each other incessantly. We gossip. We share intimacies. I mean, sometimes it's really irritating, but it's what we do. And men seem to have this sort of outward looking rather than looking at each other. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's that, and I don't know if we want to go back to the old days and cavemen and how the right. Men had to go out and hunt and then fight together, and the women were facing each other around the fire and taking care of children. It's hard to know how much of that actually is, you know, was true then and, right. and is actually, you know, still hanging around. But the notion is that we feel more comfortable, and it was touched on by Ted, and I found that in my own research that the fear of being gay is something that does affect, at least in the 360 men in my book, does affect how they act. So they aren't gonna feel comfortable reaching out to other men too. I interviewed one man who said that he moved to a new city, he wanted to meet another guy, and yeah, he called him up once, and the guy wasn't free, and then it was like, well, do I call him up again? Does that make me a stalker? And I'm a straight man, and I'm in my mid-60s, the oldest probably
guy out of this group, and I mean, I was raised to chase women, so I was raised to be also comfortable with being rejected by women, but I'm not comfortable being rejected by men. So I think it's hard for men to approach other men for friendships. And to get back to your direct question, if I'm going to approach some guy, it's going to be around doing an activity. Let's go meet at the sports bar. Let's play tennis. Let's play golf. Let's go surfing. Let's not meet at an intimate French restaurant and share a bottle of wine.
But do you think this is a generational issue? Whether, I mean, it's, you know, it's 2014. We've got gay marriage in more and more states. I'm just wondering whether, you know, the 20-somethings or the 30-somethings have some of this homophobia, frankly, that you're all talking about, Ted?
Well, again, that's not my area of focus, but the book that I think addresses this most directly is Michael Kimmel's book, Guyland, and he talks about the 15 to 25-year-olds quite in depth, and I think he did work very similar to Jeffrey's in terms of hundreds of interviews with men that age. And there's a lot of differences, and there's a lot of bonding around things that are less than healthy. And Michael Kimmel came to Philadelphia a couple of years ago and spoke, and he also said that people misinterpret his message. It's not that he's criticizing those young men. He's criticizing the older men who aren't teaching and mentoring in an effective way about how to have, you know, healthy, intimate relationships with each other and with women in particular.
Well, and to you, Duane, I'd be curious about your thoughts about a minute before we have to take our first break here.
Well, my own feeling, which is, to be honest, it really is informed also by Michael Kimmel's writing, but by my own experience, is that I certainly grew up with that sort of fear, that sort of homophobic fear of your friends. But I also grew up in San Francisco, in Berkeley, but in the San Francisco Bay Area, really in the 70s and 80s, when gay male identity was really sort of exploding as a legitimate social, identification. And I think that made things a little more sort of nuanced and complicated for my generation. And I suspect that it does for guys younger than myself. I'm 46, I think.
You would know.
It seems to me that as homophobia fades a little in popular culture, it's making space a little bit for straight male friendship to kind of come out of the closet again. And that's what I hear in that exchange in Superbad. In other words, I hear something positive in that. I hear guys younger than myself sort of creeping back out of, the fear of being seen as gay and just saying, oh, the hell with it. I think that's what was going on in that movie. There was a movie by that name, the movie I Love You, Man. There have been a couple of these sort of bromance movies.
Well, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a very short break talking with Daniel Duane, Ted Glackman, and Jeffrey Greif about male friendship. I'm frankly surprised we spent so much time on homophobia, but nonetheless, we're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. Talk about some other features with male friendship. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Amtrak, featuring patripsbytrain.com. Offering train packages to destinations along Amtrak's Keystone service line. More information on available excursion packages at patripsbytrain.com.
A teenager runs away and finds herself in New Orleans.
I was ready to have some adventure, make some friends, and really I thought, maybe I'll learn how to be an electrician or something.
Instead, Alinda Lee Segarra started a band, Hooray for the Riff Raff. They'll perform for us next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Nothing for kids to do this summer? How about checking out a DIY website where they can earn merit badges? For instance, helping to build an amphibious vehicle.
Oh, this is so sweet.
Let's get the battery off.
Woo, floaty!
Fun next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from the new Wells Fargo Propel World American Express card, designed to bring the world within reach for Wells Fargo customers. Details at a local Philadelphia area branch or wellsfargo.com/propel. Wells Fargo, the world is open. Keep exploring.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are exploring male friendship in our guest's hour. Jeffrey Greif, he's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, author of a book called Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships. Daniel Duane, a contributing editor for Men's Journal magazine, wrote a piece recently that caught our eye, Why Men Suck at Friendship. And Ted Glackman, director of Horizon House Delaware, a licensed psychologist, and he's been part of a men's group for about 15 years, and he co-leads a men's therapy support group as well. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Jeffrey Greif, let me go back to you and just, I want to focus on the fun, healthy, good parts of male relationships. I don't want to just talk about all the sort of anxieties about it. But from your research, and I'm assuming we are social creatures, men and women, we want social relationships. And I'm assuming men get from their friends what women get from their friends. They may just get it differently. Do I have that right or wrong?
Yeah, no, I think you encapsulated it very well. What I try to say in the book is that it's not that men's friendships are not as good as women's friendships. Our friendships just operate differently, and I think that's important for men to embrace and for men to feel comfortable with the fact that maybe for them a good friendship is sitting on the couch and watching the game and not necessarily knowing that the other man is going through an incredible identity crisis, but also being there if the man chooses to share that identity crisis. A lot of men's friendships do not have a lot of deep sharing, though again, I think that from a generational point of view is certainly changing. Younger men are more open than older men in general. Society in general is shifting, so I, at 65, am more open than my father was at 65. So we have two different things sort of shifting when we look across the lifespan, and people are much more comfortable with androgyny than ever before. No, I shouldn't say than ever before, than in the last 130 years, because men's friendships used to be a lot more emotionally expressive than they've become. In the 1800s and earlier, there are letters of men saying, "I can't wait to be back in your arms again and to see you," and it was all a platonic love. So we've got a number of things going on here, but the message is that men's friendships are usually working. A lot of men want more from their friendships, but a lot of women want more from their friendships, too.
Indeed. Ted, you've been in a men's peer group for about 15 years. What keeps that group going?
Well, I think it's interesting to consider what got it started as well as what keeps it going. And when it got started when we were in our late 40s, early 50s. And I think that was a time of life for me, and I think for the other guys in the group, where relationships were starting to narrow a bit. Careers were intense, or kids were about to leave the house. Probably there was probably an overfocus on our relationships with our partners. And I think that was wearing on those relationships with our partners. And I was aware of some men's work and was reading and thinking about it, was aware of some groups.
Right.
A friend of mine came back in the area who had been in a men's group in Westchester County. And he and I reconnected, and we decided to do a group here. But for me, it addressed a lot of things going on in my life at the time, and I think for the other men as well.
So you do share some of your concerns, your worries?
Yeah, I think over the 15 years, we initially had more structure to our check-ins, and we gave each other time. I think it's gotten more informal over the 15 years. We still meet twice a month. I think for a couple of years, we met every week.
Wow.
But we still meet twice a month, and we meet over dinner now, where we used to meet in an office or at somebody's house. So it's shifted over time, but in a comfortable way. And we all, in a very important way, bear witness to each other's lives. We've all been through surgeries, through crises with our children and our relationships, and have seen each other through it. And it's been, I think it's been very important to all of us at different times of our lives.
Daniel, let me go back to you. We were talking a bit about your relationship with Matt, whom you went surfing with. I mean, do you have close male friends?
Do I? Well, yes and no. You know, there guys have been, I have had very close male friends over the years, mostly through activities, you know, like I was a rock climber for many years and I had some really intense climbing buddies and partners. And then, you know, when I was there, I still surf a lot, but there was a period when I had more of a surf posse, I guess, you know, guys I saw in the water all the time.
Right.
But I'm, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm in my late 40s now and I work a lot and I got kids and marriage and all this stuff and it's harder. And I'm more in a phase now of, like a lot of guys I kind of know, where we're all sort of reaching out to each other, you know, kind of going, hey, do you want to maybe get a beer one of these days or something? Yeah. You know, there's sort of, I know a number of other guys like that right now where we're all trying to figure out how to make it work for the back half. You know?
And what's the, I mean, what's the hesitation or what's the struggle then? Is as you see yourself and your friends kind of tentatively reaching out to each other, what's the barrier, Daniel?
Well, you know, it's a couple of different things. It's time, you know, who has the time, kind of thing. We tend not to. I don't know. At least among the guys I know at my age, there's a tendency to sort of put very heavy value on work and the time you put into your marriage and your kids, and to see just about everything else except maybe trying to stay in shape as a kind of self-indulgence a little bit.
You're allowed.
Yeah. And then there's just also the matter of, you know, male friendships tend to be forged and made really strong, at least in my experience, through the doing. You know, like Matt and I became... We built that friendship over many years of just being in the water at the same time, at the same place, and watching, you know, hooting each other into waves and going for a burrito after a good session. And it was really organic. And then there were days when we were out in the water when the surf was big and that brought us tight or that kind of thing. And it's a little, you know, it's a little harder to forge connection just purely through, you know, hey, do you want to go out for coffee? Not that it can't be done. It just is, you know, I guess there's a little nervousness in reaching out to other guys that way. You know, in other words, when you say, hey, do you want to go surfing with me? There's a sense that there's a kind of emotional protection in that, right? Well, I'm going surfing anyway. Do you want to be out there? It'd be fun to have a buddy at the same time.
Right.
But if you say, hey, man, do you want to get dinner one of these days? Just saying, hey, can we be friends? And that makes you a little vulnerable. You know, you're trying something that, I don't know.
No, I appreciate you putting it out there, Daniel. Let me give Ted Glackman a chance to respond, and I want to hear from Jeffrey as well.
Well, I think that really gets to the sensitivity we carry. We do fear rejection, and to put yourself out there and risk a rejection is not easy. In order to address that barrier, I think it takes a significant degree of intentionality not to be put off by not getting that return call. Mm-hmm. And there's a wonderful documentary by a guy named Hank Mandel called Five Friends, where he keeps he displays how he keeps in touch with these five people who are now spread around the country. And he makes the explicit point that, you know, don't wait for that return call to stay connected to someone. Make that second call. Don't get caught up in sort of not a tit for tat, but an even exchange. It's not always even, and if it's important, break through that barrier.
To you, Jeffrey, do you think men, because of the kind of reluctance that we're hearing to have a close male friend, do you think men are lonely because of that, or lonelier maybe even than women?
It's hard to. It's really hard to compare the experience of women and men. So I think that the way to think about it is that, yes, there are a lot of men out there who, I won't say the majority, the minority, who are looking for greater connections with other men. Keep in mind that we're raised from the time we're three that we get kindergarten reports or preschool reports. You know, how well does little Jeffrey make friends? And that gets put into our head at a pretty young age. And as we reach our 40s and 50s, as we were hearing from Dan, and I had that experience too, and the kids no longer want us in their lives in the same way that they did, our careers are settled, hopefully our partnerships or marriages are settled, we begin to look for more connections, and sometimes we can find them. And I definitely second what the point that Ted was making, is that if you want to make a friend, it's going to require you to move outside of your comfort zone sometime and actively reach out to other people, but you have to do it doing things that you like to do and not try and be somebody that you're not, or else you're going to end up, to go back to your first point, you're going to end up being lonely because you'll be doing things you don't like doing.
Jeffrey, do men, and again, we're speaking these broad generalizations, but to men, are they more likely to confide in a woman or confide in a friend, do you think?
According to the research that I've read, and this is not my own research, yes, men feel more comfortable confiding in women, and in turn, women feel more comfortable confiding in women, too. So it works out pretty well for women if they're comfortable having both men and women confide in each other. I've done a book on couples and how couples make friendships with other couples, and then you get into issues of who's confiding with whom and how do women drag men into couples friendships.
I like the use of the word drag. Daniel, yes. Going back to you, would that be true for you that you, and I'm sorry to sort of put you on the spot, you're asking all these personal questions, but do you tend to more confide in, let's say, your wife than maybe your friend Matt?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. Although Matt and I have a pretty tender friendship, is the truth. I mean, it took a long time to get there, but we're both pretty confessional guys by nature, and so we've had some real spill it out heart to hearts, but it doesn't happen as often. No, that definitely happens more with my wife.
Well, let me get some callers in on the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. We are exploring the nature of male friendship. And again, our guests are Daniel Duane and Ted Glackman and Jeffrey Greif. And we have, looks like Bob calling us from Rittenhouse Square. Bob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Love your show. And
thank
I just want to, when you talk about friends, I unfortunately lost three of my best male friends in the last 3 years.
Oh,
all three
wow.
were public. Ugh. People, I was a pallbearer at each of their funerals.
Wow.
Two of them died tragically. One was Lewis Katz only a couple weeks ago,
oh,
May 31st.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He and I were friendly for 53 years. We met at Temple in 1961. We were on the board together of the Temple trustees. One was Arlen Specter, who I helped get elected district attorney in 65, and unfortunately passed away 2 years ago, as you know, 2012. And one was my good friend, Bob Daniels, who was Superior Court judge and chancellor of the bar, and Bob tragically fell down the steps at someone's house. So
oh dear.
My point is, when you have a best friend, tell them you love them, let them know, and best friends are formed because you go on vacations together with your families, you share dinners together, you talk to them often, you know the phone numbers in your head, and my friend Lewis Katz, my last call to him was a few days before he got tragically killed in a plane crash, is that I said, Lou, congratulations on getting an inquiry. He said, Bob, I love you, but I'll call you right back. And Lou and I were just, we were at each other's weddings.
Sure,
so
you know,
I
Bob,
like
yeah, no, I hear you. And you're talking about, obviously, these are long-term relationships, and here's someone, and I'm looking at you, Ted, here's someone who, you know, in the span of a couple of years, lost really long, good friends in many ways to tragic situations. It's a big loss for somebody.
Well, Bob, I'm very sorry for your recent loss, especially. Yeah. That must have been very difficult for that kind of a sudden loss. However, as you process through your grief, which will be its own journey, you know, my thought is also, as I listen, that life is for the living.
Yeah.
And having friendship skills are all the more important when you have lost possibly two or three or four of the closest friends you have. And as we age, we're going to have these losses. But our life goes on. And having the skills is critical.
Indeed. Let me get Chris from, looks like Frankfurt, to join our conversation. Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. I'm to just fill into the discussion here. I work for the city at the recreation department, and I had a rather unusual friendship developed over the course of a couple of years, which actually took place in a rather narrow range of activities, primarily at the rec center where I work. And this girl would come around. We quickly found out we shared common interests, and he would frequently come around. We would have a game of, not chess, but Go.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many people say that. He happened to be very good at it. I was doing Tai Chi. He happens to be very, very good at Tai Chi, and so forth. And
what happened, Chris? Yeah, what happened?
You know, he just became unreachable. He stopped coming around, and I couldn't get to raise him on the phone. And he was a very smart guy. And initially, I kind of thought, what was a smart guy like that doing hanging around with me anyway? But I just, you know, I accept it. I accept whatever reasons he may have had. And I really felt privileged to have a great friendship like that. So, and I, you know, there were a couple of times when it was just he and I at the rec center playing Go or whatever. But the thought of gay thing, whatever, it never really passed my mind. Mm. Never occurred to me. You know,
Well, Chris, yeah, let me take your point, and what I even see on the computer screen here is that when he stopped coming around, you felt rejected, and now sort of have more accepted that this is the end of a relationship, which Jeffrey Greif sort of gets to, you know, a friendship involves our intense feelings and our intense feelings for another person.
Yes, and of course the loss of a friendship, especially these long-term friendships that Bob also was talking about.
Right.
On the prior call, a lot of the men that I spoke to said that their best friends were people they had known from childhood. And the problem is, and I'm using the word problem advisedly, is that when you get to be 65 at my age or whatever age you are, as your friends are dying out, if you believe that you can only be very close friends with somebody from childhood, it's going to make your relationships a little bit more circumscribed. So one of the issues that a lot of people are raising is the ability to make new friends now, and that's incredibly important. If I believe that I can only be close friends with a guy I've known since I was 12,
right,
I'm going to be working with a narrower band of support.
Chris, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation. That's Jeffrey Greif. He's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. Wrote a book called Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships. Also joining us by telephone, Daniel Duane. He's a contributing editor for Men's Journal magazine, author of a recent piece titled Why Men Suck at Friendship. And Ted Glackman with us here in our Philadelphia studio, director of Horizon House Delaware, a licensed psychologist. He's been part of a men's peer group for 15 years, and he co-leads a men's therapy support group. We are talking about male friendship, the friendship between men. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We'll be right back.
The Barnes Foundation supports WHYY and announces The World is an Apple, The Still Lifes of Paul Cézanne. Along with 69 Cézannes in the permanent collection, this exhibition shows how the artist revolutionized still life, making ordinary objects vibrate with color and pulse with life. Art lovers are invited to a preview party Saturday evening, June 21st, to celebrate Cézanne and to view the show before the official opening. Tickets to the June 21st preview at barnesfoundation.org or 215-278-7200.
On the next Fresh Air, Joshua Ferris talks about his new novel, To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. It's about a dentist who sees so much oral decay and disease, he considers himself part mortician. Constantly facing the inevitability of death, he longs for faith, but is capable only of doubt. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7, on WHYY.
Syria, a swamp of chaos. Iraq, a juggernaut of radicals. Iran ascending and the U.S. on the sidelines. Not my words.
This is a very, very dangerous, world-shattering situation.
Just some of the thoughts of Christian Amanpour on Iraq's return to sectarian chaos. Our focus this week on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Let me read an email from Rodney, who says, I've been listening for years, huge fan. However, I'm disappointed by the show so far. While you've mentioned the place of homophobia and straight male friendship, this entire discussion is framed about as being about men, while it is really about straight men. It's as if non-straight male friendships don't exist or don't matter. And I'm actually glad that Rodney raised that, because it seems to me that if we're going to talk about straight men and gay men, that straight men could learn a lot from gay men about the kind of friendships that they have with each other. And I wonder if I could toss that back to you, Jeffrey Greif.
I think Roddy is making a great point. I think from what my research shows, I talk about it in the book at some length, and I interviewed a number of men who were gay. There's one man that is featured throughout the book, that the experiences of gay men with other men is not the same as it is between straight men, that some of the issues that drive friendships between gay men do not exist between straight men. And when I blog for Psychology Today and I talk about friendships between men and women and whether or not that's possible, some of the same issues do arise. So I think it's a more complicated issue than can be easily handled in one or two phrases from me. And I am straight, so I also am a little bit reluctant to go into that to great extent in terms of my own experiences. So I'm left to report on the research and on the things I've heard from men that I've personally interviewed.
Ted, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think I agree. Rodney makes a great point, and that could be a whole nother show.
Sure, right.
In discussion. I also have had some experience with group members that I've run who are out and gay or not out and gay or bisexual. There are commonalities and differences, and I guess that's all I'll say about that, because I think we could spend quite a bit of time on that.
Yeah, we could. And I have to say, I have gay male friends who are friends with each other, and what I see is just friendship. I mean, and friendship, in which is complicated and expresses itself in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, there are more wrinkles, but I think there's more commonalities than differences.
Indeed.
Personally.
Daniel, anything you want to add to that?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I'm straight, so what the hell do I know? But I do know, you know, the closest I can speak to that just from my own experience is just and it's a pattern I bet it's sort of similar to the caller from the rec center in a funny way, is that I lifted weights a lot for a number of years in a gym where I made some intensely close friendships that are a source of curiosity to me in a way that's relevant to Rodney's question, but also just to male friendship in general. Mm-hmm. So one of the guys I got really close to was gay. The sort of the weird thing about it is this is as close a friendship as I've ever had in the context of lifting weights, and yet I don't even know this guy's last name. And then when I switched from weightlifting to a different kind of exercise and joined a different gym, I felt sort of bereft, realizing I don't even know how to get in touch with that guy. We're not even Facebook friends. So there's a real loss for me there. That's less about the gay-straight issue than about the sort of, you know, activity friends issue, right? We were friends in the context of weightlifting. But, man, we really poured our hearts out to each other, and then all of a sudden, poof, that's gone. But on the sort of gay-straight part of that, there was this element of there was a little bit of a sort of ginger thing we had to do with each other, I think, just sort of figure out what we were doing with each other as we became friends. Mm. But it wasn't so hard or such a big deal. We figured it out pretty fast. I guess I should stop there.
And on a personal note, I want to say that one of my husband's best friend is gay. So it's just, I mean, I just think this is the world that we live in, and which is why I was sort of pushing back on this, the sort of homophobia part of our conversation.
I think that's one of the more encouraging parts of young people and sort of the openness in the discussion in high school, I think there are generational levels of comfort that are encouraging to see. And I see that most clearly at the high school level.
Let me get Linda from Princeton to join us. Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Marty, and to your guests. I rarely sit and weep during a program.
Oh, dear.
I've just been weeping nonstop listening to this. My dad has never really had any He had six children, and I'm wondering what the gentleman would say if a man is afraid to have friendships or feels very reserved. My father's very dignified. When one marries, if that capacity hasn't been developed, how does it translate into being able to relate to a wife and to children?
Well, that's a very provocative question.
We often mistook his silence and reservation for indifference, but perhaps it was that he didn't have that experience at relating freely to people before he got married.
Well, Linda, obviously we...
what they say.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Jeffrey, if I can, only because you talked about men being not sort of, I guess, socialized in the same kind of way, broadly speaking, do you think that's related to what Linda just talked about?
Yeah, I think he's raising another very interesting question, which is, how do men get where they get in terms of A, their friendships with men, and B, their relationships with women, and is there a connection between one's emotional distance from people in general, and is it all sort of mixed in? And of course, some of this, and it varies, you know, we're talking about very complicated issues that are very idiosyncratic to people, and it may have been a learned role from his father or from families. And some family therapy theories, there are intergenerational processes that are handed down. If I admire my father and I watch how he conducted his men's friendships, to what extent am I going to be adopting his style? And he was born in 1913 and died in 2004 at the age of 91. So am I watching him die and how close he is with his friends, or am I more aware that he was really only close with my mother and really was a very friendly guy with no close friends? So I would be thinking about the caller and wondering if maybe there's a 20% chance or 50% chance that part of what his father got, he maybe learned from another generation of men, and that was one that he was trying to be supportive of, and to look at it as something that he was trying to honor in a certain way.
Linda, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We have an email from Vince saying, I have had four close male friends for the past 40 years, but I doubt we would have developed as friends if we came together as part of a couples group. I doubt we would have developed as friends. So the idea, I guess, if it was a couple, they may not have been friends, but as a foursome, they developed a friendship. Does that sort of resonate with you, Ted Glackman?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't done too many couples groups, so I don't know whether that would tend to be true or not. What I do know is when men come into therapy, usually their wives are pretty big fans of that move.
Oh, interesting.
They applaud, they cheer. Now, after treatment starts, they start to have some reservations and curiosity about what's being talked about, which, of course, is confidential. But yeah, that's an interesting observation, and I'm not sure whether that would be true across the board or not.
And Daniel, I wonder too whether maybe it's easier for men to do things in groups versus, you know, one-on-one. I don't know from your experience, and I should say I have been saying the wrong name of your piece. It's called Do Men Suck at Friendship? A question mark there. But nonetheless, do you think it's easier for men to sort of pal around as a foursome or a sixsome as opposed to a twosome?
You know, that to my mind, that is a thing specific to different kinds of guys, but I've actually thought about that a bit in recently, because I'm a little bit of a one-on-one kind of friendship person.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of always have been. I tend to have a few really close friends. But maybe it had to do with the sports I was doing. You know, the climbing that I did for many years was something you typically did with one other guy. So it was just me and one other guy, you know, for having, you know, through really long periods of time together.
In dangerous situations, too. That helps, right?
Yeah, right. Going through intense experiences together and all that. But then there also are, there do seem to be these guys, and to be honest, I kind of envy them, you know, who always seem to have a posse of buddies. And they hang out in these big groups and do stuff in groups. And, you know, hey, Friday night is poker night or, you know, whatever it is. It looks good from the outside. I just, it somehow has never quite been my emotional disposition.
Well, let me get Rick from, looks like Warminster, to join our conversation. Rick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
The observation I would make is that in my experiences, men communicate facts, women communicate feelings, to make a very generalized statement. And I think when men come to a situation, they generally have an agenda. They're going to gain information, factual information. Mm. They listen to a point, and they glean from that what it is that could contribute to either their career or a validation of previous conceived facts that they have in their minds, whereas women have a multitude of friends or acquaintances because they feel comfortable in a cathartic way by sharing feelings. Men traditionally go to their man cave, protect those feelings because they want to appear as the strong man, the silent man, the man who can solve all problems and come out, and very reluctant, if you will, to show a vulnerability.
Well, Rick, let me see what Ted Glackman thinks of your diagnosis there.
Well, I think it's easy to make that demarcation, sort of the Mars-Venus kind of analysis of men and women. But I think there's some inherent dangers with that. I think there's considerably more overlap than we would like to think. And I think that the demands of our society are changing rapidly in the last 200 years. And there's considerably more overlap, and I think there's potential for more healthy overlap than that. Mm. That
the facts, feelings,
this
thing.
Facts, feeling, Mars, Venus kinds of analysis. I think there's inherent danger to staying in that mode of thought.
Do you see it that way, Jeffrey Grives?
Yeah, I see it sort of in that way, and also in the way that it was discussed by Dan. Some of these people reaching out to other men, reaching out to other men, it just may be the nature of the guy. He may like to be in one-on-one relationships. It's a little safer if I'm going to try and generate a friendship to invite over a bunch of guys to watch the football game as opposed to one guy. So it's a little bit less intense. And men in general don't like high-maintenance friendships, and they will sometimes criticize women's friendships, just to get into that a little bit, for being so high-maintenance, is what the men have told me. And this is obviously not all men, but that was a theme that came up among some of the interviews that I did, that what they're looking for in a friendship is not something overly high-maintenance. And to go back to the caller, it's easier to exchange facts and have a debate about facts than it is to discuss feelings and get into gray areas. And men typically don't like gray areas, though obviously, as Ted said, there's a huge range now.
Rick, thanks for the call. Let me see what Tyler from Sewell, New Jersey has to say. Tyler, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I just have to say that I'm 20 years old, and it's a lot easier for people, kids my age, to become close friends and, I don't know, hug and talk about feelings, I guess. And I think that might be because of my generation's openness to all the homosexual movement. We're fighting for gay marriage, and I don't know, I just think that we're more open to that kind of thing.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Daniel Duane a chance to respond to that. And, you know, here's someone who's 20 years old, a very different perspective on friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe a healthier one. I don't know.
What's that? Yeah, sure it is. I mean, you know, I think some of it is also just the luxury of youth, you know, just being young and
one has a lot more time for friendship, right? When I mean, not everybody, but a lot of them do when we're younger. More time just to hang out and get close to people as opposed to scrambling around doing other stuff. But there's also, but I think he's really spot on. I mean, when I was poking around and looking into all this stuff, I was really struck by the rise of the bromance as a pop cultural form. There've been movies on the subject. There's a really funny YouTube video called Bromance, or like a music video, in which people, you know, in which guys of the caller's generation seem to be able to play around with elements of homophobia in a way that's, in other words, seem to be able to sort of joke about things that made my generation really tense. Seem to be able to sort of joke about it and then dismiss it and get on with being really close to each other and expressing that closeness in a way that made my, you know, whereas like guys my age, I mean, it's sort of a cliche, but it's true. You know, we'd go to the movies when I was
Dwayne, I hate to do this only because we are out of time and we have to end our conversation. Daniel Dwayne and Jeffrey Greif and Ted Glackman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. A bit of a not a very elegant way to end the show. And Adam Staniszewski, our engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. And this is Randy Newman.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together.